So although I didn't attend an HBCU, I respect and appreciate spaces like this because as Black people, education has been weaponized against us. And miseducation has been a tool of our oppression and control. That was my experience in much of school. So to be able to be in places where honest narratives are being taught is beautiful, you know what I mean?
All right, so last episode, we celebrated Black Fathers. This episode, we are here in the heart of Atlanta at Morehouse College to celebrate the importance of HBCUs in our community. I'm your host, Brian McIntosh, and I'm here with some fellas who carry their legacy on a daily. First up, we have a man who did one of the greatest biopics ever in the Bobby Brown story. He's an actor, producer, dancer, and had us all in our feelings this year with his legendary character in the hit series, Power. The streets know him as Kane, but here at BET, we all know him as the legendary, Woody McClain. My dog.
Thank you, bro. Yeah.
Hey, listen, yeah. We appreciate you being Black, man. You're having a great year.
Of course. Thank you, bro.
Next up, we have a rising star who is running laps around the competition on the racetrack and the classroom. He is only the third Black NASCAR driver to win a national series, and he is doing this all while being a full-time student at Winston-Salem State University. Ladies and gentlemen, Rajah Carew. Clap it up. We appreciate you being here, man. We appreciate it. Next up, we have somebody who always keeps the party going. This legendary DJ has curated some of the biggest vibes for the Queen Bee and the Obamas. You may have been to one of his legendary Beeham block parties. He's a DJ, activist, actor, and most importantly, a Morehouse alum, the one and only Brian Henry. Absolutely, man. We appreciate you, man. We appreciate you. Last but certainly not least, we have somebody who is constantly pushing the culture forward. He's an actor, rapper, and was recently just named in BET's culture class for 2024. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Vic Mensa. We're gonna talk mental health, fatherhood, everything that you guys got going on. This episode is focused on the power of HBCUs in our community. And I couldn't think of a better partner with Walmart and their Black Unlimited program to help amplify, you know, that story and what they have going on, man. So, you know, I want to kick it off. You know, there was an article that went out recently that said enrollment is down across the board for Black males, specifically with HBCUs, you know? So I want to come in with you guys and just talk about the importance. Woody, I know FAMU, that's where you got your start. So just speak to like the importance that FAMU has kind of played in your journey.
FAMU allowed me to just be me. You know, that's where I was able to, like, join a dance crew. Like, I never thought about dancing until I went to FAMU. You know, and I told mom, like, you got to come see me dance. She was like, Negro, you don't dance? I'm like, I do now. You know what I mean? So, like, FAMU, like, just embraced us to just do and try whatever we wanted to do. You know, I was in a modeling troupe, dancing. Like, I did everything.
I want to circle back because, like, you know, you went to FAMU, you were a college student. Like you said, you got to exposed to so many things. But I feel like a lot of college students that are here today, man, and they're going to watch this, you feel like you always got it figured out. So I'm curious, man, you know, picture yourself back at FAMU, you on those college streets. What was going on through a young Woody's mind on just what he was trying to accomplish and how to get there?
Man, I was just trying to be the best at whatever it is I put my hands on. Like, I've always had this obsession with just being the best version of what I can do. You know what I mean? I usually start at the bottom. I'm usually nobody's, like, number one choice. So I have to work extra hard to, like, get there. But that's just been my journey.
For sure. And it's like, you know, you kind of created your own lane, you know what I'm saying? Doing what you were doing in the band, then it turns into social media. So kind of speak on, like, how social media, getting into social media and now propelling you to doing legendary movies and hit series.
See, social media taught me how to edit my own videos, showed me how to cast my own videos. So when I was able, shout out to BET, do my first project, it felt like home. It felt like I've been doing it for so long because I was able to do it on social media. You know, social media is super, super important. And whatever you want to try, I feel like you can just do it now. You can just set your camera up and just do whatever you want to.
I love that. So, Roger, I want to come to you because, like, with Woody, he was like, he created his own lane. He seized the moment, took the opportunity into his own hands. You have done that. You know what I'm saying? You're a Black NASCAR driver from D.C. You got St. Vincent lineage. So, like, you know, it ain't no racetracks in D.C. You know what I mean? Ain't no racetracks. So, I think you, like, taught yourself how to drive virtually. So kind of speak to, like, how you got into racing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I grew up being a racing fan, watching on TV, and didn't grow up at the racetrack. Like you said, you know, being born here in Atlanta and growing up in Brooklyn and DC, there's no racetracks there at all. So I had to learn through racing online. And so I taught myself just the basics of racing after being a fan for so long. And fortunate enough with divine timing to get noticed at the time when I was, you know, racing online and really had others take a chance on me to develop me as a driver.
You see a movie as a young child, I think it was like age 4 or 6.
Seen the Cars movie.
Yeah, and that kind of sparked your interest, right? And then as you come into the teenage years, you're teaching yourself how to drive virtually, right? Now, you know, you just got behind a car, I think at 17 for 17. The first time. Now you're 22, winning and competing at a high level in NASCAR. Just speak to how you're getting so motivated to kind of accomplish these things. Because to be so young, you know, a lot of times it's hard to get that motivation and figure things out. You have literally set a plan and executed it.
I think I'm just really lucky because I found what I wanted to do and it doesn't feel like work. You know, I mean, I got up this morning at 5 o'clock to go work out, you know, before coming here, right? And, you know, have simulator training every other day and spending time at the race shop, and it never feels like work. So I feel really lucky to have that opportunity to just pour more into my craft because it's my passion, it's my why. And so I'm really lucky to be able to chase my dream. So.
And then you're doing this while being a college student, you know, and shout out to Winston-Salem State. They're the only HBCU.
Any Rams?
No Rams today, but it's all good. It's all good, yeah. Hey, listen, brother, you're on Morehouse. You might want to tread lightly with that, brother. You might want to tread lightly. But I do want to give Winston a shout-out because they are the only HBCU with a motorsports management program. So just speak to, you know, how it is, like, kind of balancing that. Like, you're doing NASCAR, and then you're walking the campus of an HBCU. It's kind of two different worlds. So, like, just speak to, like, you know, what's kind of the experience been with that?
Yes, I've just really learned the importance of community, I think, being at school, because like you said, racing is a completely different world. But there's been so many students, faculty and family that have come to the racetrack to support me. And so it's been really, really a blessing to feel the true sense of community and family, both on campus and at the racetrack.
Nah, I love that, man. Brian, I want to come to you, man, because you're here. You know, you're the hometown favorite, you know, being a Morehouse alum, man. I'm curious, man, what made you choose an HBCU, but specifically Morehouse?
No, honestly, I feel like Morehouse chose me. Not only from the admission standpoint, but Morehouse came into my life at a very pivotal chapter. During my senior year of high school, my mother, Tracy, passed away from a 14-month battle with breast cancer. And as you can imagine, I was just devastated. And the beautiful thing about it is I applied early and got accepted in December. And my mother gave me her blessing to attend in December. And she passed away that March of that year. And coming to Morehouse, you know, Morehouse, the environment of Morehouse became my mother. Dear old Morehouse, you know, teaching me things that I didn't even know at home in terms of, like, you know, a greater level of chivalry and how to pray and, you know, how to study, because you think you know how to study until you get this environment where you meet brothers who are the most intelligent Black men on this planet. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful because deciding to attend and graduate from Morehouse is the best decision of my life.
I love that, man. I love that answer. Vic, I want to come to you because I know you didn't go to HBCU, but you are from Chicago and you are in hip hop. So obviously you embody the culture every day, you know what I'm saying, when you're walking. Can you just speak to, you know, how Chicago has kind of just influenced you every day and what you do? And I feel like for you, you're very strategic in the things that you do with your career, when it comes to the roles you pick, when it comes to your music. Just kind of speak to the influence.
You know, my father's from Ghana, West Africa, and he always says that he wanted to raise me in Chicago so that I could get an honest perspective of what America is. Chicago is a very polarizing place. It's a place where great wealth exists in direct juxtaposition to extreme poverty, you know what I mean? And there's this rich lineage and history of social movements from the Black Panther Party with Fred Hampton, you know, to writers like Gwendolyn Brooks and, I mean, Malcolm cut his teeth in Chicago with the Nation of Islam. All of that is directly next to, like, the birth of gang culture, you know, that is often ascribed to L.A., but really most of it was founded in Chicago. And so growing up in Chicago, I think you come in a tradition of, like, just a nuanced Black experience. And are witness to, like, a lot of struggle, beauty, and art all at once. And so as I've grown in that culture and tradition, I had just amazing mentors along the way, you know, to, like, put a vote of confidence in me and in my art, and have sought to, like, pass that on to the next generation. That's always been a huge part of what I do. So Chicago inspires and informs me in all those ways.
Nah, I love that answer, man. And you brought up mentorship. I think for me, man, again, you said it earlier, Brian, like going to HBCU was one of the best decisions you made. For me, man, I went to North Carolina Central University. My first week of college, I lose my father to a heart attack. First week of college, right? So it's like, for me, I was struggling with my school. I was struggling with attending because I was going through depression, trying to figure out, you know, what I wanted to be in life, but then also try to be the man that he raised me to be. And if it wasn't my professors, if it wasn't the faculty at the university that cared about a young black boy with his mama trying to figure out how she's going to pay the mortgage, how she's going to put him through school, if they didn't care, you know, I would have lost my way. So I think mentorship is everything. And that's why I appreciate the fact that historically black colleges are around for people like us, because it's generally people around us that care. It's your professors, the auntie, the uncle,
yep,
somebody who's going to call you out when you're not doing what you need to be doing. We need that accountability, you know? So I just love and appreciate that. And I think that's just been a pivotal thing in my life. So, Brian, I want to come to you when it comes to Morehouse. Just speak to how, whether the mentorship, just specifically at Morehouse, but just in general, has like helped you in your life and career.
I mean, I definitely have some professors here who let me have it. Like, I could drop you from these classes right now because you're an excellent student, but you're showing up late, you know? And it's that level of accountability that, you know, how you do one thing is how you do all things. And so if you're going to show up late to class, then when it's time for you to go into the world and whatever career path you choose, you'll do that same thing. And so Morehouse nipped it in the bud, that level of mentorship from my professors, as well as my older brothers here at this institution, just got me right, you know what I mean? And those, again, are skills and that pushed me into, you know, where I am blessed to be today.
Nah, I love that. Woody, I want to come to you when it comes to FAMU and your career. Like, just speak to people that have just helped you along the way, kept you on track.
Like, 75% of where I am is because of HBCU. You know what I mean? It taught me how to be on time. You know what I mean? How to be structured. Like, I took all that. And FAMU, they're very big on excellence. You know what I mean? So they kind of, like, instill it in us to, like, just be excellent at everything you're doing. You know what I mean? So just taking that, those tools that I got from there and bringing it over to the industry has been a cakewalk for me.
But you mentioned your career, man. Obviously, I think it's been a lot of people that have helped you. I think, you know, when it came to Vine and you getting notes on social media, that helped you sign deals with, you know, major people in the industry. But not even on the BET side, I think Robbie Reed is somebody that, you know, you've always loved and appreciated with the Bobby Brown story. Speak to, you know, flowers you want to give for somebody that's a mentor like Robbie or anybody else.
Man, I can't even name one person. Like, It's so many people that's what I'm saying. Like, 75% of me, like, it came from, like, people like Robbie Reed, Fatima Robinson. She was the one that introduced me to Robbie Reed, you know what I mean? And I remember auditioning for Bobby Brown, and they were saying, like, they have to be able to sing. I was the only person that didn't know how to sing, but because of social media and what I was doing over there, I was taking these stand-ups and doing, like, lip sync, like, voiceovers and recreating them, and they seen how well I was doing those voiceovers. They were like, yo, we can get Leon Thomas to come in and sing Woody's parts and he'll just lip sync it. It'll be perfect. You know what I mean? So that's how I was able to get that job, because of my training and the Vine days. You know what I mean? So it was like a full circle moment.
Roger, I want to come to you, man, because you have a unique perspective, I think, when it comes to mentorship, when it comes to the relationship you have with your father. So, you know, it's no secret you and your father have, you know, a great relationship. I've watched the interviews, man. I personally just love to see that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have a 7-year-old, my son Moore, and it's like, you know, I aspire to have that type of relationship that you and your dad have. When you guys are together doing interviews, you can tell he's very hands-on in everything you do. I read something online where he's teaching at Howard, and then he's driving to your races all the way in North Carolina. You right?
I'm so lucky, man. So my dad, you know, immigrated from St. Vincent with his brothers and sisters to, you know, Brooklyn in the 80s, and left Brooklyn, came here to Clark Atlanta to get his education, and is now teaching at Howard and has raised both myself and my little sister. Well, she's not little, but my little sister. And I'm really lucky because, like you guys attested to, it's important to have, you know, really good people in your life that will let you know when you're not doing what you're supposed to do, but and also let you know when you're doing things the right way. So my dad, he's held me accountable. He's helped me make my roadmap to chase my dream. He supported it through every step of the way. And same with my moms and my sister and my extended family. So I'm super thankful for my village, but specifically my dad, because he's been there every step of the way, and I would not be here if not for him.
Absolutely. I love that answer, man. And again, like, you know, you a black driver in NASCAR, which is predominantly white. And, you know, obviously, you know, it could be a lot to handle. And you're going from two different worlds, going to HBCU and then driving on the weekends, right? Speak to how your dad has been able to help you navigate in the world. You're not from their world, right? You don't walk like them. You don't talk like them. You don't come from that background. How has your dad been able to help you stay on track, stay positive, have confidence? Because you're young and you're Black. And he's helping you have that confidence to step on the line. And you know you can compete with everybody on that line.
Yeah, there's so many things that my dad has instilled in me from growing up in D.C. in terms of how to carry myself, in terms of dressing how I'm supposed to, being on time to things, speaking, saying sir and ma'am, and making sure I'm being, you know, respectful. You know, young person, especially going to these different places where, you know, people will assume who you are because of how we look, you know, and just carrying yourself a certain way. And so he's instilled those qualities and those really non-negotiables that we all have to have from a young age, from before I can remember, you know, taking the metro to school and walking to school and being around in the city. So that's another reason I would say that I'm able to survive in this world of racing, because it's a culture shock for me. I think going to like Kansas City and Las Vegas and Michigan and like these racetracks and places that otherwise I would have never been to, yeah. And just various different parts of the country, and just to make sure that I'm solid and carrying myself a certain way is really thanks to him.
Nah, for sure, man. And again, like, you know, you're from the inner city, you're from D.C. Speak about just some of the influence that, you know, the city had on you.
Man, I don't want to expose myself, but it's been great. You know, growing up in the city, I mean, spend a lot of time playing sports. And like I said, taking the metro, you learn a lot, I guess, you know, being in the city of how to carry yourself and staying out of trouble. And also being in school, and luckily in my high school education, I was able to really get some good exposure to not only just racing, but other jobs in whether it's government or politics or different corporate positions in the city. And so I think that really gave me some perspective on, you know, options and, like I said, just how to carry myself as a young man.
I love that, man. I love that answer. Vic, I want to come to you, man, when it comes to mentorship. I'm curious, man, because for you, I've always felt like, you know, you've been wiser beyond your years and how you carry yourself and how strategic you are in your career. So just share, like, who have been some people along the way that you feel like have just kind of helped you when it comes to mentorship?
Man, Brother Mike. Rest in peace, Brother Mike. Brother Mike had a program on 47th Street near my parents' house. It was called DYN, Digital Youth Network. And it was one of the first studios that I was able to attend. And I thought the way that he mentored us was so interesting and ultimately like so valuable, because in order to get studio time, he made us learn skills. So if I wanted to record my song, I'm like 15 years old at this point in time. If I wanted to record my song, I had to put together a PowerPoint presentation using Photoshop. And to this day, I'm a wizard with Photoshop.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like that listened to what I was doing as a kid and put a vote of confidence in me. Even before that, I was like a graffiti writer when I was a shorty. And rest in peace, my big brother Cam, he wrote Dare. And I didn't even make music yet. I was just like literally making street art. And him putting me, you know, in his circle, in his crew, and just saying, this is my shorty, he's dope.
Yeah.
That instilled a certain level of confidence in myself, you know, that when I became a musician and was expressing myself in maybe a more like ubiquitous art form, I carried that through into everything I did. So to this day, I try to be that for people, you know, even if it's a small interaction, just trying to be the highest version of myself in every situation that I can. Like, I met a brother on the way here, actually, who has a fire clothing line. He's a Morehouse student, and his clothing line is called Wise Juveniles. And, you know, just when they came to me and they were showing me the jackets and the shirts and hoodies that they're making, it was just in my mind, like, take this moment to really have a conversation with them and, like, don't brush it off. Like, assess, you know, what they're doing, appreciate it, like, give input, and instill a vote of confidence in young Black men, because it was so pivotal for me. So I would say those guys I mentioned, and as I grew older, like working with Kanye and Jay-Z specifically has been very formative for me. So much I learned from that. You know what I mean? Kanye is like the master of collaboration. And Kanye will teach you that there's power in surrounding yourself with the brightest minds. And I think that's like the basis of an institution like Morehouse, you know, and if from a music perspective, creative perspective, connecting with even differently minded creatives, somebody in an entirely different field. Kanye showed me that having TV writers come in on your music project is valuable because they're thinking about writing from another paradigm, you know? Whereas I would say Hove as a mentor is very detailed and strategic. And Hove is a master of restraint. Mm. There would be times like I was real hot-headed, you know? And Hove would just give me the right perspective to, you know, cool out, you know? Don't diss that person. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You feel a way right now, but don't express it in that way. You know what I'm saying? And if you obviously see and follow his moves, you see that, you know, that strategy works. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, restraint, that's something that can be difficult, you know, especially as a person of passion.
I love that answer, man. Like you said, man, going to college at HBCU, man, it's like you're getting the proper narrative, not the false narrative. You know, I felt intimidated to, like, go for that first job where I was trying to compete against these other PWIs. These are people coming from, like, USC, Penn State, these big schools. Here I am coming from a small HBCU in the South. And am I good enough? Can I compete? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I think that's a lie. That's a false narrative here because we're sitting here now, right, and we're HBCU, so that's a false narrative about
it. I feel like they always make us feel like we're not good enough. But I feel like, honestly, we're overprepared. You know what I mean? I feel like HBCU.
Facts. It prepares you in a way to go into the world and know that you are a force to be reckoned with. Mm. And the whole notion of, you know, the seat at a table is like, nah, my ancestors created this seat, this table, this entire establishment. I more than deserve to be here. Mm. And I've never had a mentality when I walked in the world and thought that I was less than because I was a black male. You know what I mean? Media will try to portray you in that way. But the, you know, advantages of going and attending and graduating from Morehouse, it teaches you that you're the alpha and the omega, you know, that you come through with a level of creativity, ingenuity, and intellect that has value in any area that you decide to be a part of. And the great thing about this HBCU institution is it tells you not to come in and just participate, but also to come in and to lead, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, nah. And I think another thing I appreciate about HBCUs is just being able to be myself. Mm-hmm. I never had to, like, hide my personality. I never had to hide how I dress, what I felt about things on political issues. Yeah. These are people that care about what I care about, and I appreciated that so much. So, like, Vic, like, for you, like, you know, for us, man, you know, we from around the way. And you're in corporate America, you know what I mean, trying to, you know, build a brand, build a business, you know what I'm saying, while, you know what I'm saying, coming from where we come from, right? You know, being black, coming from the inner city, going to HBCU. So I want all you guys, but Vic, I want to come to you first. Just speak to how you've been able to create a successful brand and be a powerhouse in this industry while still being your authentic self.
I think that it's just valuable to be an individual. And oftentimes, the same qualities that black people are judged and chastised for are the things that ultimately we're celebrated for, you know? And just learning not to dim my own light, you know? And I think having the confidence to just be me in whatever room I walk into, you know? However I dress, however I talk. Not being changed by the world, you know what I mean? Seek to change the world and not to be changed by the world. I've always been somebody that, like, you know, I get those things. Oh, you're so articulate for, you know. The other part is silent, you know, but just you're so articulate. You know, I just seek to, like, carry my lineage with me, the people that have inspired me, the people that have taught me ancestrally. I try to carry that into everything that I do and just be unapologetically me.
Yeah. No, I love that.
So we have a program called the Black Star Line Youth Program taking kids. I think some of our students did actually in the last few years go to HBCUs. We've taken them when they've been leaving high school, but taking 17, 18, 19-year-old kids from inner-city Black Chicago to Ghana, just to broaden their perspective of the world and of themselves. You know, James Baldwin says, know from whence you came, then there are absolutely no limitations to where you can go. And I feel that a lot of the struggles we face as Black people in America are often directly connected to our disconnection from our history, you know, and that's a systematic generational effort. Like, yo, I went to this maroon village in the mountains of Jamaica. It's called Akrampong. It's like a beautiful place. So the maroons are people that escaped from slavery early and founded their own towns in the mountains, often in the Caribbean. And they were armed, they were organized, they were obscured because they were in the mountains, and so they were able to fight the British for their sovereignty. I say all this to say that walking through this maroon village in the mountains of Jamaica that has been sovereign since like the 16, 1700s, these people are so in tune with their African customs, and in that 400 years, they've had one murder, you know, like they collectively own the land, just having a direct connection to their roots that's been stripped from us has enabled them to maintain a degree of peace that, you know, we can only strive to in our circumstances, because these circumstances are different. But it was so revelatory to me because I was like, wow, like this is just an example, a snapshot of like a different history where we haven't been directly under the heel for the last 400 years, you know?
No, I love that, man. It's like, you know, with the program that you have, like you're broadening kids' horizon and exposing them to things that they wouldn't be exposed to. Cause I feel like a lot of times as a Black man or Black woman in general, we feel like there's limitations on what we can do. You know, can I really do this? Can I do that? You know, that's kind of the false narrative that goes around with our community. Is like, yo, you can't really do that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what I appreciate about everybody sitting here, you know no boundaries. Yeah, each one of you has expanded on everything that you wanted to do and then some. What do y'all want to come to you? Because, you know, you're active. People don't know that you got your start dancing, though. You was Chris Brown background dancer, right?
Yeah, my parents was really good at letting me do whatever it is I wanted. You know what I mean? They never question it. It's like, yo, Mom, I want to paint. They'll give me a painting book. You know what I mean? Like, they would just let me be free in the creative space because I was so, like, off the walls. But they realized, like, yo, creatively, Woody got something.
Yeah.
So whatever it is I wanted to do, bro, I was able to tap into it. You know what I mean? I think the only reason why I got into dance is because at FAMU, the FAMU Strikers were on stage. These are regular guys that go to class every day, and they had girls screaming. I was like, I gotta learn how to dance. I need girls to scream for me. I need that, bro. Like, I need women screaming for me.
Smart man.
Yeah. So I spent the whole summer learning how to dance, bro.
Really?
I learned how to dance during the summertime. Then I ended up making a dance crew. And then from there, my homies that was on America's Best Dance Crew in LA was like, bro, you got to come out here. You can get paid for dancing. So then I ended up moving from Tallahassee to LA. Started dancing. I started dancing with Ginuwine first.
Ginuwine.
I went to 7th Streeter.
Word.
And then that's when I met CB. And he was like, who you dancing for? I'm like, I'm dancing with 7. He was like, oh, she's my dancer. Yeah, you going to dance with me? I was like, word? And I was like right behind him in the Loyal music video. And then from there, we just was always locked in. You know, and then while I'm doing that, then my boy over here hit me like, bro, you got to do these Facebook videos with me. I'm doing funny videos. I'm like, bro, I came to L.A. to dance. I'm not trying to do no videos.
Yeah.
I get on Facebook, he got 10 million views. I hit him up, I'm like, bro, I'm trying to do some videos.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like, so then I spent that whole summer learning how to make Vine videos, you know what I mean? And then that door just opened up. Like, anything I wanted to do, like, I'm gonna do it, bro. Like, right now I wanna music produce. So like, I'm back in the studio producing music. Trust me, by next year, y'all gonna be like, dang, would he produce that? Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Now. Because I can do whatever I want to. I bet on myself every time. I'm getting hyped right now, my bad.
Nah.
Let me chill. But yeah, always bet on yourself, man. And I'm always betting on myself. And my parents bet on me too. And we always win.
Nah, you know? Thanks. Nah, yeah.
I'm not trying to promote gambling, but.
I dig it, man. It's like, roll the dice and bet on yourself. And I remember me and you, we had a conversation the other day, and you was like, I bet on myself and I never lost.
Yeah, I've never.
Can you kind of speak to like how you rolled the dice on yourself?
Anytime I bet on myself, I've always won. And I think that comes from, being steeped in prayer and getting those downloads and that divine, ultralight being, And I think that's so important because when we're pursuing our dreams, we often talk to our family who love us the most, and sometimes they're not the most supportive. And that's okay because they love you and they want to protect you. And the reality is like, you got that vision and you and your dreams were in place from your heart so that you can take the unmanifest and bring it into the manifest. You know what I'm saying? So I love how you say that, one minute your vision is here, the next minute your vision is there. But like, I think that's what we're here to do. By the time we leave this earth, we're going to leave this earth empty because we've given everything yep.
Absolutely.
That we have while we're here. So I think that's really dope.
Mm-hmm. Nah, man. Brian, I want to circle back to you, man, because again, you're a Morehouse grad. You graduate, then you go to Harvard Business School, right? And then it's like, you know what? This ain't for me. I'm going to change my journey. And you get into DJing. So like, just speak about, you kind of like corporate all the way. And then it's like, I'm going to follow this.
Yeah, I think that's the most surprising thing people don't know. I mean, like, I was an economics major in undergrad, And they like, you a DJ? I was on the path to go to business school. And I'd done the summer venture management program at Harvard Business School, done a UCLA Reading Fellows program, and just very much on this fast track to get an advanced education, get an MBA. And they was just going through that process. It just required me to be very introspective, And I knew for sure that I always loved music, but I didn't know what to do with it, But working at these corporations, they gave me this great business acumen, this great foundation, but I hated how I felt about myself and I hated showing up every day because there was something in me, just a voice in me telling me like, yo, this ain't it.
Yeah.
And so rather than going toward the path that I originally set out to go to Harvard Business School, I said, you know what? I'm quitting this job and I'm going to become a DJ. So instead I enrolled at the Scratch Academy in LA, which is a DJ school founded by the late great Jam Master Jay, of Run DMC. And I remember I took one class, a 6-week course, and quit that job and it came in again. And my DJ instructor said, what? They like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is hard. Becoming a DJ is hard. I said, I'm going to be a celebrity DJ. They said, you got to go ask for the job back. I was like, nah, it's too late. It's already done.
Yeah.
But the great thing about it is this, I was just so focused on it. And I said, you know what? Worst case scenario, if it doesn't work out, I'll have a great admission story to go to business school. Well, started off doing backyard barbecues and looking to my left and right. My Morehouse brothers were giving me a call like, hey, can you come to my mama's 60th birthday party?
Yeah.
And going into those markets where I'm spending someone's 60th birthday party, hit up the local club promoter and say, hey, can I open up for free? And those things built from the backyard barbecues all the way up to our Forever Shorts family. So I'm feeling grateful to continue to be on this path.
Nah, man. It's like, again, you roll the dice and you're betting yourself. You never lost yet. You know what I'm saying? I love that, man. It's like, I want to come to you, Roger, because it's like, you're growing up in D.C., right? You have this passion to get into NASCAR driving. Obviously, your peers aren't doing that. I'm pretty sure you came across with some of your homeboys like, bro, you're going to get into driving, NASCAR driving? Like, what are you doing? What is that? You know what I'm saying? So listening to yourself and going out there, and now you're sitting here, we're going to speak into existence that you're going to be one of the greatest in the sport. You know what I mean? And you're only 22 and already getting wins. Speak to just like, growing up, making that decision and making that leap of faith, even though people probably thought that wasn't the best decision for a black man from D.C.
Man, it wasn't easy at all. I think for racing, a lot of the families and have their kids start when they're 5, 6, or 10 years old, right? And so I loved it at that age, but didn't get the chance to get started till I was a junior in high school. And so there was a lot of times where I thought the dream was over and there was no chance to chase it. But I just kept following my why. I remember having an internship my junior year of high school, working at the box office at the GW Sports Complex. And I made a website of my racing online and was making YouTube videos and trying to build my brand and doing every little thing that I thought was possible to make it happen. So to your point, Brian, I just bent on myself and it never felt like work. I just kept doing every little thing that I felt like would make a difference. And I got very fortunate that it did.
Nah. I love that answer, man. I love that answer, man. And to circle back just to HBCUs for a second, I just want to make sure that we're giving Morehouse and just HBCUs in general, just their flowers. Because again, they have really given us a home when we didn't have one, right? I feel like everybody is seen, everybody is heard, you know? So I kind of just want each of you to kind of give your perspective on just like how HBCUs, within the culture in general, has received you guys and heard you guys. Brian, I want to come to you first. Just speak to your experience at Morehouse. HBCUs in general, how you feel like Black men are heard?
I think that, you know, HBCUs teach you they're not a monolithic being, you know, that we come from such diverse backgrounds, different cities and towns and culture nuances across the board, and you learn that there's such diversity within your own Blackness, you know what I'm saying? And one thing that I felt is really unique and cool is even diversity and how we show up in orientation, particularly within the LGBTQ plus community. You know, W.E.B. Du Bois talks about this notion of a double consciousness in which Black men have to show up with their awareness of the white male perspective and then also the Black perspective. I think within an LGBTQ plus community, there's an even expanded consciousness because you can think about how white men show up, Black men show up, straight people show up, queer people show up. But so often, you know, there's this thing about, you know, representation ain't enough. Mm. It's about collaboration, because when you have the awareness of all of these consciousness, if you will, it brings a level of creativity that once you get your LGBTQ plus community and your straight community together, man, we can power through anything. You know what I'm saying? I think, unfortunately, we spend too much time being diffused, but I think there's a great level when you bring together that, like I said, that creativity and that intellect from both sides, we can power through anything. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I think that's one of the things that HBCUs promote, you know, understand that we're far more powerful together than we ever would be apart.
Now, that's powerful, man. I love that, man. And, you know, just to piggyback off what you said, man, like for me, what you had mentioned, how you was modeling and stuff like that. I did that too at Central. So I was in a model too.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the same thing. I'm like, I'm trying to be, you know,
I'm trying to get my fly on.
But going to HBCU, you know what I'm saying, and being in a modeling troupe, there were members of the LGBT community in that, right? And these are my guys. These are my friends. Like, if I got a club, we got a section, yo, bro, come you with me. Yeah. Like, you're going to pull up. Like, these are my guys. Like, we practicing together. They cool. Love is love. But there was a stigma with that, right? Some of my homeboys who maybe have an old school mindset, they're just like, yo, B, what you doing? Like, why are you hanging with him? And I'm like, what you mean, bro? Like, this my guy. Like, we had Saucy Santana on one of the episodes here for the fellas. And, you know, I felt it when he said, you know, I never want to have a son because I wouldn't want my child to go through what I had to go through, the bullying and things like that, you know? And it's just, what you could touch on it too, is just like, for me, I just always felt like love is love. Like, it was never no boundaries for me. Like, these my guys, you my guy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You one of the fellas, right?
Yeah.
So like, Woody, just speak on that, because I know you was dancing, things like that. You know, I know down south, sometimes you had to deal with that stigma.
That's, man, fam, you opened that up.
Yeah.
Like, it changed my mind on like, yo, we all humans, you know what I mean? We all have a purpose out here.
Yeah.
So shout out to FAMU for that. And speaking on like the mentorship, you know what I mean? I think HBCUs are great for that, because it don't matter whatever field you're in, you're going to run into somebody from an HBCU.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now that I'm on the acting side, I can be like, yo, Will Packer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? FAMU, Sam Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, it's dope just to have that community.
Yeah.
And I did not answer what you was just.
It's all good.
I feel like we was here, but then I just started going.
It's all good, brother. It's
damn,
all good.
Bro, my bad, y'all.
My bad, y'all. So again, like, you know, you're in the marching band, you're dancing, things like that. I'm pretty sure, like, growing up, and at our age group, trying to be a dancer, like, it's like, yo, what you want to dance? Like, what you got going on? And then you're being cool with guys.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that never bothered. After I went to HBCU, that never bothered me no more.
Mm.
Yeah, we all humans.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
I'm going to stay right here. Yeah.
Yeah, nah. I love that answer, man. Brian, I want to circle back to you. Just speak to how you feel like HBCUs have been proactive and just making that dialogue easier.
How have HBCUs been proactive?
How should they be proactive to kind of make things easier?
I think that, you know, again, it just speaks to the point of us being a collaborative environment.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? When we can find that our differences actually create value, then we don't have to use our differences to separate us. You know what I'm saying? As long as we focus our energy on that, you know, there's enough forces out here in the world that's already trying to be against us. We can't be against ourselves. You know what I mean? And understand that, you know, that's what some other cultures want. They want us to be diffused. They don't want us to be, they don't want us to collaborate, because we know when we collaborate, we're the most powerful people on this earth.
Yeah.
They've known that for years. It's time for us to know it.
It's just everybody, like you said, they don't want us to collaborate. So it's just understanding, having a high intelligence to know, yo, everybody's worth this. Everybody's worth that respect. Everybody's worth that love. Nobody is less than, you know? And that's why I appreciate spaces like this with For the Fellas. And I appreciate Walmart Black Unlimited program to make sure that black men feel seen and heard no matter your background. I feel like that's essential, you know? And for me, that just helped me a lot in my life. I'm curious for you guys. Just, Vic, I'll come to you next. Just speak to how ways you were heard and seen that kind of helped influence you now. Mm. Coming from Chicago, coming in the industry, you spoke about the relationship with Hov.
Yeah, I would say, like, the music that I first connected with Hov through was music that was at the time really left of center. You know what I mean? It was Chicago house music. A song I did called Down on My Luck that I released in London was probably the first music that I really connected with Hov on. And at the time, I remember feeling mixed emotions about it, you know, because it was a long time before Beyonce would be doing Renaissance album or people like Kate Renata, who I was working with at that time, but like we're in the mainstream. So a black man doing house music was strange to people, especially in a hip hop space. I mean, some of us know that house music is black music and was co-opted in many ways and unified into white culture, but a lot of people didn't know that, you know what I mean? And so to be seen and heard in that way and like appreciated for my individuality, you know what I mean? I think that is something that's been incredibly valuable for me at the times when I did take risks, which has really been my whole career. Risks to be an outlier, risks to be different than what was mainstream, and have been seen and appreciated for that, you know, by people I respect, by people that I see and I appreciate, or people that I've aspired to be like in ways. That's been valuable for me, because it can be intimidating to step out and say, I'm going to be a different kind of artist. Mm. I'm going to create something that is not like what the masses are creating. And you don't always get the feedback you want, you know what I'm saying? But like when you do, it can put a battery in your back to tell you, okay, this is valuable. You know what I mean? Being me against all odds, you know, whether it works or not, you know, is valuable.
Nah, I love that, man. I love that. And I know we got to get going, so I'm just going to kind of wrap it up with one or two quick questions. Woody, I want to circle back to you. A fan tweeted the other day about you not winning. If you don't get an Emmy for this performance in Kane from this Power season, that they're going to riot. You had retweeted it and said, it's all good, fam. Like, I'm not really tripping about it. From an HBCU, we always are the underdog, right? Mm-hmm. And for you, you've had a lot of success. All you guys have had a lot of success. But, you know, it's times where maybe you're not getting the accolades that you want. Do you still feel like an underdog, even though you've had so much success in your career?
Nah, I feel like God got me right where he wanted me to be at. Mm. You know, maybe he don't want me to have the accolade for that, you know?
Yeah.
Nah, my bad. I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be, you know what I mean? Maybe he don't want me to get accolades for this thing over here. Maybe he got something else cooking over here. You know what I mean? I'm always looking at it like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Damn, I was about to go somewhere else, but I'm going to stay right here.
You was cooking.
Yeah. Stay right here.
And I'll quickly toss it to you guys. Like, we live in a society, and you guys work in a respective industry where accolades kind of validate your success, right? Hip-hop, racing, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just your accolades, you know what I mean?
I feel like the people show so much love. Like, I've been a part of a lot of cultural, like, from New Edition to Power to like doing the Yolanda Adams video, everybody laughing at. I'm like, I don't care, Yolanda lit. Like, you know what I mean? I grew up listening to Miss Adams in my family's house. So like, I'm just always feel like I'm a part of the staple of the culture. So that's all the accolades I can want. Especially when my people be like, yo, great job, keep doing your thing.
Yeah.
So I'm happy. If nobody was saying anything to me, then I'll feel away. Yeah. But since the people, I'm getting, you know what I mean, the response from the people, and it's been great. That's all I need. I'm cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, I love that, man. I love that, man. I remember my dad used to say, man, he's like, all I ever wanted is to be loved by my parents and respected by my community.
There it is.
The community loves you. Mm. The community loves you, Vic. Thank you. The community loves you, Roger. The community loves you, Brian. You guys are doing great things. It's inspiring to even be here and sit here with you guys and be in your presence. We've all talked backstage, and it's like each one of you guys have inspired me, and I know you guys inspired the people here, and I know you're gonna inspire the people watching.
And congrats to you too, bro. This is amazing. Thank you for bringing us together.
Absolutely.
Seriously, bro. Thank you, bro.
Absolutely, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Nah, man. This is what For the Fellas is about, bringing black men together and having these conversations to help enlighten and educate and make us feel seen and heard, man. So I can't thank you guys enough for taking the time. And again, I can't thank our partners at Walmart with the Black Unlimited program for taking time to have an initiative for the culture. We need that here more than ever in these times that we live in. I think it's essential, and I just really can't thank Walmart enough. You know what I'm saying? So thank you guys. I appreciate it. We're going to open it up to some students. They're going to ask some questions. I really appreciate this. This is a great dialogue. Let's clap it up again for the fellas.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions for the fellas right here? My guy right here.
Hi, my name is Andrew Blakey. I'm a freshman journalism major. I had a question for you, Mr. McLean. How did your experience going to an HBCU influence your performance on Power and how you like conducted yourself in that space?
How did it? Power.
Kane definitely went to HBCU.
Kane, yeah.
100%.
Nah, David said I went to community college. He's hilarious. maybe just the professionalism, you know what I mean? Especially when coming from, like, marching band was life for me. And, like, we always had to be on time. We always had to be punctual. Like, everything was just, like, super professional. So, like, even taking those same tools into the acting game, like, it's helped me tremendously. Like, I'm never late. I always know my lines. I'm always on my cue. That's why I'm able to be free within in the craft, you know what I mean? Because I take it so serious. Yeah. Like, when I'm on set, it never feels like work. I'm just in the moment. I'm just the vessel.
Great answer, man.
Okay,
great answer. Absolutely. I know we saw some other hands, too.
This question's for my cousin, man. Shout out to Brian. Man, Brian, Matt, B-Mac. Yes, sir.
What up, cuz?
Mic check. My question for you, I know you came from, you know, from college to ESPN to BET, just, I guess, tell the folks, like, your experience from your prior job to help you set up to do stuff like this. Because we are proud of you, man, the whole fam right here in the row. You know what I'm saying? We cheering you on right now, man. So just tell the folks your experience coming from school, your first job to here.
Yeah, nah. So first of all, what up, cuz? Second of all. Second of all, man, that's a loaded question, man. I think for me, so yeah, I was HBCU grad, man. My first job out of college was at ESPN. And that was a culture shock for me because I'm coming from, you know, a predominantly black college, and I'm going all the way to Bristol, Connecticut, where I was the youngest by far and one of the few black people. So I can relate to what you're dealing with now when it comes to NASCAR. Man, that first job, it's like, it's funny, and you know, you work this hard in college, you graduate, you think, all right, I made it, and I'm gonna make this amount of money, and I'm gonna be happy. Nah, I was miserable. You know what I'm saying? It was rough because it was a culture shock for me. I was so far away from my family and my friends, and I'm working in the industry, but I'm basically like a PA where I'm like running scripts. It's like, yo, I went to college for this many years just to be like handing out scripts to people. Like, that's not what I had envisioned when I decided to major in television broadcast. But I stuck with it. And I bet on myself. So when my son was on the way, I did about 2-3 years at ESPN working on First Take and got promoted, was able to be a production associate producer on the show. And I got the job at BET. And I got my son on the way at the time. It's ESPN, they got Disney, they got all his benefits, they got all his money. And I'm coming to BET to go in social now, which is a new thing for companies. And it's like, you know, My parents is like, you know, my mom is like, my brother, they're like, are you sure you want to make this move? You going to leave ESPN, worldwide leading sports? You going to come to BET and post on social media? And I was like, yo, like, that's not my destination. Like, I'm going to come do social media, but it's going to be other opportunities for me. So I saw where things were going, and I bet on myself. So I took the job. I didn't have no benefits at the time. I got great benefits now, so thank you, Scott Mills. Thank you, Scott Mills. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I'm leaving this nice job with these great benefits, and I got a kid on the way, bro. You know what I'm saying? To go work for a company, I'm freelance, not getting no benefits, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, nah, like, I'm going to find a way to make it work. You know what I mean? So I moved to Harlem, get my roommates. Y'all know New York rent ain't cheap.
Need that.
Get the apartment, and the rest is kind of history. You know what I'm saying? So now don't have to post as much anymore. Still every now and then got to post a little something, something. But, you know, I'm here with you guys, producing my own show, leading my own creatives, and being a host with you guys. So I appreciate it. And just like a quick funny story, like I said, one of my first projects I worked on was with Woody for the Bobby Brown story. And I was a social coordinator, so I'm just running around on the phone, capturing BTS, posting his promos. And to be honest, bro, like I was inspired by seeing you. I'm like, yo, I remember, like, I used to follow him in college on the
That's
Vines.
Crazy,
and now he's
bro.
Leading the biggest biopic in history for the brand and the network, too. So to be sitting beside you, even having this conversation, is a
blessing,
full circle
bro.
Moment for me.
Yeah, same, you know bro. Mean? Same, man.
Nah,
same.
Nah, so I appreciate you guys being here. Like, it's
Absolutely,
a full circle
bro.
Moment, man. So I hope that answered the question right, cuz.
Yeah. That's dope, bro.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hi, guys. You all look amazing. Black excellence on the bit in the building. This question is for everybody. So how do you guys unlock your unlimited potential in your respective fields?
Do it afraid. You're going to be afraid of it. You'll experience imposter syndrome. But you unlock your greatness by saying, yo, what up, Fear? We're going on this journey together. Buckle up. Fear is going to be with you in every chapter. And I think we think that if you get to certain achievement or level of success, that you've done it. Well, that's just one layer. And then it's the next and the next. And every chapter you have an experience where you have a fearful moment. You got to get accustomed to it, become friends with it. And that, I believe that's how you unlock your unlimited potential.
I think for me, it's, I think for one, defining success and defining failure. I think failure is not achieving something or not obtaining something. I think failure is just not trying, you know, or not doing your best. And I think for me and in my field, we talked about accolades a little bit, right? And so a lot of the part of being an athlete is how much you win and your points you score and just your resume that you build, right? And so at the same time, there's so many things out of your control in the sports world that for me, I define success as doing my processes and making sure that I do my best, you know, on and off the racetrack. So that way I could do everything right and lead every lap and still lose the race. And still at the end of the day, I could feel okay because I was successful because I did my part, you know? And I think it would be a failure if I didn't try or if I didn't do what I know what I was supposed to do. So I think just recognizing that success isn't always tied to the accolades, but more to like your personal process.
I'll let it answer, Vic.
I would say I unlock my limited potential by having faith in God's plan, recognizing that he's working miracles that are unforeseen in the moment. And I may not know what path or twist and turn he's going to give me. And being vigilant about my thought processes, what I know that I can influence is what I think, the way that I view the circumstances of my life. So even things that may look like a failure to you, I learn things from them that are unlocking unlimited successes for me. That some have materialized and some have not yet. And as long as I don't quit, it ain't done.
Exactly. Mines would have to be caring less what other people think. There it is. Yeah, I heard that knee slap. I felt it too. Yeah. Caring less what people think and more about how I feel and how I, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's unlocking my fear. Like, I don't like talking. I'm super introverted, but like, it's crazy that God put me to acting because now I got to like do all that. But I had to get like so confident in Woody and understand like, yo, I'm really him. You know what I mean? That's why I just tell myself like all the time, I just always tell myself like I'm here for a reason. And yeah.
Nah, I love that answer, man. It's like, yeah, like you being Black and Unlimited in your respective fields because you believe in you.
Mm-hmm. You got
and
you.
And one thing I want to add to that is, you know, it always ends up working out the way it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when things are getting hard, when you know, a new project, new album, whatever you're working on, it's not going exactly how you want it to go. It's understanding this is just a part of the journey.
Yep.
And eventually you will get to where you want to go. I think that's what keeps us being unlimited in our respective fields is adversity doesn't scare us. Adversity doesn't make us quit. It doesn't make us shy away. It actually makes us go harder.
Yeah. And being genuine in the moment, too.
Mm.
I feel like once you're genuine, I think things just happen how it's supposed to. I feel like when you start being fake and start doing random stuff, I think that's where, like, it gets weird. The journey gets weird. But I feel like as long as you stay
true to you and keep following that path, you're going to lead to the right spot.
Nah, absolutely, man. This was beautiful, man.
Yeah.
I know somebody watching. I know everybody here. I know people watching. When they see this conversation, they're going to gain inspiration. And it's something needed for the community, man. So, again, I just want to thank you guys again for just being here, taking the time to just give back, not just to the students here today, but to the community in general, man. The culture needs you guys, and you guys are continuing to shift. And I speak on everybody here on BET and on behalf of Walmart when I say we love you guys, we appreciate you guys, and we look forward to seeing what you guys have next and how you continue to roll the dice and be unlimited. Absolutely, man. I know somebody out there is watching. I know somebody's going to see this and feel the testimony. Just know that we're swinging back with you. It's a fight every day, but we're going to keep having platforms like this for you guys. Keep pushing these conversations. Thanks to our partners at Walmart here at BET, and we're going to keep shining, man. I appreciate it. Let's clap it up one more time for the fellas. We got to bring it in, man.
Here
this,
it is.
This is healthy. This is healthy, right here, black man.
This healthy little right here.
You know what I mean? Bro.
I tried to make it out listen.
Organize the gaps.
I'm organize the staff. My man.
My advice to a young student is to be a consummate individual. Identify what makes you as uniquely you as possible and turn that into magic. Don't be driven by following trends or pure profitability. Dive deep into your innate gifts and give that to the world.
Right now, things might be hard, but it always gets better. Just stay at it, stay pushing through, and keep putting in the hard work, because when your time comes, you'll know it and you'll be ready. So just always bet on yourself and stay ready.
My advice to a younger student out there is that words don't teach like experiences do. We can talk about it, or you can actually take the actions to be about it. And once you put yourself in a ring by acquiring experience of the things you want to do most, that's how you allow your life to move forward, definitely toward the direction of your dreams.
I think the best thing I can tell you is to follow your why. I think that incorporates early mornings, late nights, and doing all the little things to be excellent and chase your dream. And then at the end of the day, you got to put God first and trust in him, you know, and that's all I can really say. Just follow your why. I'm Raja Kruth.
This is Vic Mensa.
I'm Brian Henry.
I'm Woody McClain, and you're watching For the Fellas on BET.
I'm your host, Brian McIntosh, and you just watched For the Fellas live right here on Morehouse College campus. We got to end it on the right way. You're about to witness the greatness of the Morehouse College House of Funk marching band. We'll be right back.